Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm here every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. If you're not familiar with the show, Get the Funk Out, you can head over to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Every show I've ever done is on there. And I'm always accepting pitches, whether it's a story you'd like to share or someone you know. You can send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at KUCI.org. Okay, so we're going to dive into a novel that's as intimate as it is inventive. My guest is Samson Knight, assistant professor at the University of Toronto, Iowa Writers Workshop graduate, and the author of The Diver, and the brand new novel, Likeness, named a best new book by People magazine. So I'm going to give you a little scoop on the book, and then Samson is standing by to join me. Likeness begins in the 1990s with a revelation that upends two women's lives and unfolds through a blend of realism and experimentation, diaries, grocery lists, even seances. It's a meditation on love, fidelity, family, and what it means to truly see ourselves in others. Samson is joining us now. Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Congratulations. I was saying, I know that feeling, getting your book out in the world. What is it like having this out now?
Yeah. Well, this one in particular, this is sort of, obviously, you pick no favorites among your books. It's the same thing as with your kids. But this one I've been laboring over for almost 10 years.
Wow.
It's a sort of like this kind of very near and dear to me piece of writing that I'm just so excited to actually share with people. I think it's, personally, I think it's my best stuff.
Very
so I'm really
cool.
Excited to have it
very
out.
Cool. Does it feel... almost cathartic to have this story out? Like, was there ever a time you woke up in the middle of the night and thought, what am I doing? Or was it like, yes, I'm ready?
Yeah. No, definitely. I think for this one, as I mentioned, I think like the kind of bloody history of drafting this novel, involved like one, you know, like a 400-page draft that I then started over from scratch, then a 500-page draft that I then started over from scratch, and then finally I started working on it with my editor at University of Iowa Press, and we found this sort of like gleaming, fleet short novel that kind of really took on the right story shape that I've been looking for that whole time. But it is massively cathartic.
I'm sure.
It feels super exciting to really finally kind of hewn this down into this kind of really... hopefully what readers agree is a kind of fast-moving, kind of catchy relationship drama that I think was always at the core of that long searching.
And I was thinking, how did he do this in 116 pages? So thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah, well, you start with, you know, it's like that joke of like the best way to make a large fortune is to make a small fortune is to start with a big one.
Yeah. Wow. So I want to dive in. You shared that you grew up in a very different kind of family. You want to share that with listeners?
Absolutely. So this book is kind of loosely based on my own family background. I was the child of an open marriage. My half-brother is a month older than me. He was born in April. I was born in May.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is kind of broadly based on that scenario kind of settling into place, and it dramatizes kind of the moment when both of these romantic partners of the same man, they're part of a polyamorous relationship, but these two partners don't know each other very well until they learn that both of them are pregnant, and they have to sort everything out and figure out what on earth they're doing and how this is actually going to work. And that's sort of... kind of in structure, I think, based a lot on my actual upbringing as a child of polyamory. But in some ways, it's actually, I think, more challenging because I you know, as part of that journey of getting this book together, it's like when you're encountering family stories, often they're either these big kind of overarching myths where everything is, you know, simple and kind of heroic. You have these stories of like, you know, this is my ancestor who, you know, first immigrated to the U.S., these types of things.
Sure.
Or they can tend to be like laundry lists, you know, sort of every little thing that's like, I said this, you said that, they said this, then they said that. And it can be really hard to find the actual, like, story shape within that, like, really thick kind of jungle of details.
Sure.
And so for me, a lot of the journey of this story was finding where the arc of this kind of arrangement coming into being really clarified itself. And so I ended up focusing on that moment when the women of this polyamorous relationship have to figure out what happens now that kids are involved.
Yeah.
How can we make this work?
So I have to ask this question, since you did boil this book down to 116 pages.
Yeah.
I'm also a screenwriter, and I'm thinking, okay, if this were a script, would it be a dramedy?
Yeah.
A comedy, you know, because you're setting this up, and I'm thinking, oh wow, what a log line.
Thank you for bringing that up, and for any producers listening, my email. No, I'm just kidding. I would absolutely. I think I would imagine this as some sort of dramedy, but I think it would have to be. It's funny because I feel like the scenario has so much of the. That kind of like miniseries feel.
Yeah.
But the book itself is really interior. I feel like I wrote it kind of the opposite of a screenplay. Cause it's so much sort of like these diaristic, entries, from all the parties involved.
Sure.
But I think if I, were envisioning this as a screenplay, I'd be, kind of inverted to be a lot more of the pitter pat.
Sure.
And the,
Okay, so I want to jump in and ask you, how were you able to decide, okay, I'm going to make this fiction versus, you know, putting in some real personal history here?
Yeah, I remember having this conversation with a industry professional who was like, this would be like one hell of a memoir. But I think I always wanted this perspective of really kind of the characters. I found my way into the story through the first person when I was really fictionalizing kind of how this type of scenario would have made sense to me if I were each person involved.
Okay.
I think when I was originally trying to tackle this material and I kept trying to sort of put the actual, you know, real life counterparts to these characters onto the page, I kept getting bogged down. I kept sort of losing the immediacy. And for me, the way in ended up being to much more drastically fictionalize this to be really reimagined as, you know, how could, if I were in this scenario, how could I have come to find my own way forward through this? And so I think one of the more surprising parts for my family members and for the people who know me is actually the characters don't really resemble the people that are kind of were in those positions,
yes.
And I think the more confusing part for them is they're. I showed this to my half brother, and he's like, they're just all you.
Interesting.
But that ended up being the way that I found to actually kind of bring the story more to life.
Well, don't you think also a sense of protecting your family and maybe people reading are going
a little bit,
phew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you,
no,
Samson.
I think it's because I was also imagining into a period that I actually don't know that many immediate details around. And so it was easier to kind of give myself more carte blanche and just kind of draft from scratch.
How old were you when you realized your family was different from your friends' families?
That's a great way of framing that question, because
yeah.
I think like I always knew that my parents were in an open marriage.
Okay.
They were kind of explained that at a very early age, but they also kind of framed this in a way where I thought that was perfectly normal.
Mm-hmm.
I had no real cognizance of this being an unusual arrangement, and in fact, like my half brother started visiting us in the summers when we were kind of like seven or so, and he started kind of coming every summer to kind of just spend us time all in the same place. We would share a bedroom,
mm-hmm.
And I introduced him to everyone I knew, and it took me a long time to realize that some of the adults were like a very odd expression when I like gave them the full details. Cause I remember saying his birthday's a month older, a month before mine, because it was just like a kind of a quirky detail.
Sure.
As I thought. And now looking back, I'm like parsing it a little bit of the kind of shared glances. But I would say that when I was a teenager is when I started to notice, I think, those small expressions. And I started to notice that this was actually something that people felt at least quite curious about. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I was like 16 or so, I started to realize also that this was probably a lot more complicated for the adults in my life than I at all had appreciated, that this was something that, had to really be worked out between all of the kind of the caregivers and my half-brother's mother, my mother, and all of the mm-hmm. tangled web. Bill kind of structing that as like a fresh sort of like a estranged material was kind of where this came out of.
Sure. As you're talking, I was just imagining in the script in my head the opening of this little boy explaining who this brother is. It's,
yeah.
And then as he gets a little older, he's explaining it and the expressions on people. And then someone gives you a marker and a whiteboard and says, can you map out your family?
Yeah. Well, man, I've always actually been as a fiction writer, especially interested in my brother's position as a 7-year-old, mm-hmm. Being like stranger in a strange land to his father's like other family, and like coming to stay with us for that first summer, must have been. I saw this image. He came with like a really thick Ziploc bag of like 1,000 Pokemon cards. he was like determined to show all of his Pokemon cards, but it just must have been like this wild experience for him.
Yeah.
Because the way at that time, the way their arrangement was sort of organized was my dad spent more time, he lived more full time sort of like with my mother and I, and then would visit my brother more intermittently.
Okay.
So there was just like so much that I wasn't appreciating at the time, but
sure.
Just like the vision of that is something I've never, No, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, that's a lot of juggling for your dad,
Yeah.
It's a lot of juggling. Was there a particular time in your life when it was a turning point that you wanted to tell the story?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, once I started to identify more with sort of, I started to kind of approach their age when they were going through this, I kind mm-hmm. of wanted to really deeply think about what this was like for them. Now I have this running joke where I say that everybody should, write a short novel about their parents deciding to have them, because it really brings you into this kind of deep sympathy with the humanity of,
yes.
like, everybody just trying to make something work out of, very rival needs.
And
because this relates to, I think, what you were hinting at before. I often, and I mean, this I think was something that my parents taught me. I often explain polyamory's approach to like open love as sort of analogous to how a parent doesn't think that they love their children less just because they have multiple children. They don't see love as like a finite quantity that runs out, when they have a sibling. They see this as something that's kind of shared, that they can kind of, that if anything, if there's just like more love in the family with more family members. But it wasn't until I was older and that I started to appreciate it's like the kids often feel quite rival with
sure.
each other, because whether or not the love is something that's this like scarce resource that's gonna run out, there are finite restraints on time and attention.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, I think this is something that in particular the second part of the book explores, where there's one of the partners of the open relationship is very much on board with the kind of the polyamorous arrangement, feels very sort of like doesn't feel as complicated as the first partner, But once kids get involved, just the logistics of needing support becomes really challenging.
Sure.
Because you can only be in one place at one time, and you just have that many more obligations. When kids get involved, there's not enough time to go around in any case.
Sure.
What
was the process like of, drafting these fictional characters and then, you know, deciding, okay, I'm not going to put so much of my own life?
It was, I think it was a kind of journey through kind of, feeling my way forward, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, in the process of kind of building this book, I found the shape to this like earlier stage and this earlier like major decision revealed itself to me. I think when I started this book, I had like grand ambitions of how I was going to like tame this creature, and by the end, I am very much tamed. and I would say that like. I think that the aspect of my own life will hopefully be visited in a sequel.
Okay.
And sort of like these situations and circumstances afterwards. Yeah.
Are you implying that your life, your relationships were influenced by your upbringing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I would 100% agree with that. I think that everybody. You can't escape your context.
It's true.
But it's also been like, trying to find the middle ground,
mm-hmm.
I think, between reacting against and recognizing the values.
You know what's so interesting,
yeah.
Samson? By the way, for listeners, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with author Samson Knight about his new book, Likeness. I feel like when we start to dive into the backstories of our families, we sometimes walk away with more empathy, even though we might have had these other feelings. We can kind of see a little clearer, especially when we wait till we're older to write about these stories.
Absolutely. No, and I think it's also like a way of engaging with their how they make sense of themselves. I think it's easy to think of your family members as, you know, side characters in your own life. You think mm-hmm. of them as, you know, villains or heroes or friends or supporting cast, and really imagining how they see themselves as main characters can be I think really eye-opening. It can be sort of a way of allowing for kind of like certain decisions to be maybe right, maybe wrong, but also maybe the best they could do in that moment, or something that's understandable
yes.
from where they stood,
yes.
And something that you could see how they felt compelled given the constraints they were facing. And I think it's really tempting with family narratives to take a strong stand, to infer a moral, and I think those things can be also true, but you know you can juggle multiple truths,
mm-hmm.
I think, the deeper you go in.
In some sense, has this brought you closer to your family after writing this book?
Yeah, I think it's been, it's really brought me, I think, into like a deeper connection with a part of the family history that otherwise I think I really hadn't, because I mean, obviously so much, this was, you know, before I arrived, and I was generally preoccupied with everything afterwards.
Sure.
And it was a really kind of a revelatory experience to really just think of them as people, which I think is a lot of the project of growing up, is really understanding your parents as analogous to you. I also shared drafts with all of my family members. My brother, who's a month older than me, he's always just wants a bigger role.
Okay.
When the book got slimmed down, he was like, you need to, he wants to make sure that he's, getting his biography.
Yeah.
And he's
like, beef it up, add me in there.
Yeah, yeah. I told him during one drafting thing, I was like, I'm sorry, man, I cut you. And he was like, you cut me? You didn't cut me. but he is not cut. He is the only child who is not cut. Okay. No coincidence. But, yeah.
Wow. So what else would you like listeners to know about this book?
Yeah, I guess I would... my dream for this book was always for this to be kind of to build a really quiet relationship with the reader. I remember my one of my most treasured reading experiences was when I read In Search of Lost Time over, you know, some period of months. And then for a long time afterwards, I just really missed having that voice in my head. Mm-hmm. That remains to me this ideal reading experience of feeling like you've really gotten to know someone through reading, and then just wishing you could spend more time with that friend.
Yes.
And that's my grandest ambition for this novel, is that there's a real person in these pages who will, you can continue to revisit by reading again.
And tell me about the cover. How did you decide on the artwork on the cover?
Yeah, it was, I have to give full credit to my wife. She has brilliant aesthetic taste. But I would say that it kind of represents the impossible balance. It's sort of this, I think, non-Euclidean triangle that can't actually exist in a sort of like Escherian way.
Yes.
But still visually has this illusion of balance. And I think that the tensions in the book are kind of mirrored in that impossible triangle.
Mm-hmm.
That's they try to sustain.
You know, it's funny. I love to study shapes like this, and I'm thinking, wait, if I were to draw this, this is not what it would look like.
Yeah, it can't actually. It's like the staircase. It doesn't actually. It folds on itself.
Yes.
And I think that in the same way, I think the novel, the relationships are connected, but something's got to give.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great cover. Great cover. Reminds me of, there's an artist, I can't think of his name, but he has these illusions when he draws, and you think you're going up a staircase and you end up somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe M.C. Escher,
I
want to say.
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah.
Very cool.
No, it's, yeah.
So tell me, how does it feel with all these great reviews coming in?
It feels wonderful. It feels like especially after such a long journey, it feels really reassuring. I think one of the hardest parts of being a writer is you get all these humbling experiences early on where you think something is done, mm-hmm. and you think something is fantastic, and then you. A very kind teacher sits you down and says this, that, the other. And I would say that one of the goals and one of the hardest tasks of becoming a professional writer is really learning to see your own text and to actually be able to encounter it the way that a new reader might.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always, everything's always an acid test of whether you've actually seen it right.
I know.
And so I think this is like, really helpful in helping to feel that I can start to trust myself that at long last this did, it's not just that I'm really happy that it's working for people, but also that it's working in the ways that I thought it was, and learning that I can start to feel a little more reassured that I'm not going crazy.
Do you feel a sense of calm, inner peace, closure, anything, knowing that this, you got this out in the world?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that my wife and I just welcomed our first child in April.
Congratulations.
So we have a 3-month-old. So inner peace is a strong term for what I'm feeling right now, but
okay.
But
well, that's wonderful.
I'll. But yeah.
Well, it's exciting. I mean, how does this compare briefly? I know we have to wrap up soon to The Diver.
Oh, well, very different genre. I would say that the Diver, they're both about troubled marriages. Mm-hmm. The Diver's kind of short introduction is that it's about a woman who goes scuba diving with her husband. And then while she's underwater, they run out of oxygen. And she has there's a moment when she thinks that he's taking the last breath and leaving her behind.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of in that moment, makes up her mind that she will not be left behind, elbows him in the throat, takes the last breath, ascends to the surface. And then suddenly like realizes that she's not sure if she interpreted the situation right, not sure what actually happened. And, the rest of the book is her basically trying, to bring him back. A little bit different, but still about sort of, troubled marriage.
Cliffhanger. Okay. Thank you. We're going to have to get into that one. I want to thank you so much for calling in. Where can people find out more about you, Samson?
You can look at my website, samsonknight.com, and you can find a copy of The Diver anywhere books are sold and on bookshop.org as well as Amazon and all other online sellers.
You know, it's so funny. You said your name really fast, and I thought, wait, the luggage company is Samsonite.
Yeah. My parents had no idea they were doing homage to so many Korean companies. It is Samsung Knight. No relation.
So funny. Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation, and congratulations on your book. We've been talking to Samson Knight and about his book, Likeness, which is out now. Congratulations. Wonderful to talk with you.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Take care. If you missed any part of my conversation, it will be up on the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And I do want to mention that UCI just received an incredible award, the 2025 Excellence in Mental Health and Wellbeing Award. And they were among 71 nationwide to be honored by Insight into Academia magazine. I put the news release up on the show blog, again, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And this just was announced August 5th. And all the details are up there, and it's just wonderful recognition for UCI and all they're doing to tune into student mental health and well-being. So we're going to take a short break. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.